We have a virtual seminar from Daniel Jeffries at Harvard University, and he's telling us about stringy ER equal EPR. So please start.
Okay, well, thanks for the invitation to speak. It's fun to be visiting a Privet Institute in spirit, if not body. So I think this is the second virtual seminar I've ever given. But your setup seems much better. So, okay, so I'm going to talk about some work in progress with my student, Elliot Schneider. I don't know, do you see the mouse pointer, I assume? Yeah, okay. So the idea is to, can we give a kind of microscopic understanding of ER equals EPR in the sense of find a string duality, which looks like a duality between, on one side, the connected black hole geometry, and on the other side, some entangled sum of disconnected microstates. So I'll sort of explain that general idea. And the main part will be to reuse something like the old FCZ duality, which is a 2D CFT duality that I'll review a little bit. But in particular, to explain what it means in Lorentz signature, which was not apparent in the old days and in all of the subsequent work on this FCZ duality. And then I'll also give a related conjecture for 3D like BTZ black holes or even ADS3 Rindler spins. Okay, so let me just jump into it. So the basic idea is, you know, we have this notion that a pair of entangled black holes have interiors joined by non-traversable wormholes. So that first started in around 2001 or two in a paper of Malzacena, specific to the thermofield double state, but it's been kind of generalized to many situations. So from various indirect evidence, mostly from ADS-CFT, we think that, again, when you have some pair of entangled black holes, then the interiors are connected in this kind of space time. So it's like the maximally extended Penrose diagram with two asymptotically ADS regions. So if like I jump in from this side and this thing comes from the other side, we meet somehow in the interior. Now, of course, the Hamiltonian is completely decoupled here. I didn't turn any interaction between the two sides, just a decoupled sum of the left and right Hamiltonia. And the state is some specific state of these two non-interacting copies of your CFT. In particular, the simplest and most canonical example is this thermofield double state, so-called because if I live only on the left, it looks like a thermal state on the left and vice versa. It has a very particular structure of entanglement. On the other hand, if you looked at a factorized state, like for instance, E left times E right without the sum, or psi left tensor psi right, they could be different. Those would correspond, obviously, to some disconnected space-time dual that had nothing to do with the, it would look like a disconnected space-time. Okay, so a kind of puzzling aspect of this correspondence or duality or the conjecture is that the geometry is somehow encoded by the entanglement of the state, which isn't the linear operator. In other words, each element of this superposition of states corresponds to a disconnected spacetime. It sounds like it contradicts the linearity of quantum mechanics to say that the superposition is now a connected spacetime. Okay, so there are various ways to think about, that sort of paradox has been examined in different ways. It's related to these constructions of state-dependent operators in the interior and other ideas that sound fairly exotic. But maybe it's better if we would understand this correspondence as a duality. So, for instance, what seems clear from this story is that, you know, the number of connected components of space-time is somehow not a well-defined property of quantum gravity. There can be two descriptions of the same state, this one and that one. This one, we say, has a single connected component of space. This is the superposition of things where there are two disconnected components of space. So it can't be a well-defined property. Oh, what is this one? Okay, on the other hand, in string theory, the lack of duality and variance of geometric features is a familiar thing. So maybe ER equals EPR is a kind of string duality where we can have two different descriptions of the same configuration, one of them connected and one of them disconnected. And the question that I want to raised today, or what I would try to explain to you, is some example where you can really see it work like that quite explicitly. Okay, now the basic examples I'll discuss today are the two-dimensional linear dilaton black hole. That will be most of the talk. And then I'll also mention a BTZ black hole and at the pure Enesenes point. So in other words, when there's no Ramon-Ramon flux, so it's easy to describe things in world shape. Actually, I'm really lying. I'm just going to talk about the bosonic string. But it would be easy to generalize to the Enesenes superstring. And these two backgrounds, the 2D linear dilaton black hole and the BTZ black hole, as world sheet string theories, that is the world sheet CFT, in the first case is described by SL2R mod U and COSA, and the second one by an SL2R mod Z orbifold model. And a simple way to think about it is just that the SL2R manifold looks like ADS3. If I take ADS3 quotient by U1, I end up with the geometry of the 2D linear dilaton. And if I take ADS3 quotiented by some shifts, that gives me the BTZ orbifold black hole. And these two world sheet CFTs describe a target space which has two asymptotic regions. They look like the eternal black holes. People don't always describe them like that, but that's the correct description. And the question is whether you can find a dual description of the world sheet CFT, which looks like string theory around an entangled state in a disconnected target space. Okay, now I should say, of course, what do I mean, you might already ask, by string perturbation theory around an entangled state? So we usually, well, kind of heuristically or colloquially describe string perturbation theory about being around a classical Lorentzian background. Sorry, my computer keeps making some annoying beeps here. I don't know how to shut that off. But. So we think of doing string perturbation theory around classical Lorentzian backgrounds, classical in the G string sense, right? Not, of course, alpha prime exact, but classical in the G string sense. But that's actually not quite right. That's both more than we can do and less. So it's more than we can do because, in fact, in general, if we have general time-dependent backgrounds, we don't really know the correct formalism to describe them on a world shape. And part of the reason why is because if I have a general time-dependent background from the target space point of view, there's no unique choice of vacuum or state that we should talk about. And so there has to be some way of encoding that choice in the string world shape, which is something which is not often discussed. On the other hand, we do know how to do world sheet string theory in many examples that are not just classical backgrounds. For example, people have discussed thermal string theory dating back to the 1980s, like perturbation theory around a thermofield double entangled gas of ordinary strings and two copies of ADS is something that we do know how to do using usual world sheet formalism, although it's a slightly less studied example, let's say. So I'll review it shortly how that works, how you study string perturbation theory, say, in the thermofield double state in ADS. But it's fairly conventional. So I'll have a little detour to kind of describe how to do string perturbation theory around things like the thermofield double state, just because I think it's somewhat less familiar. I'm not sure if the following story is new or something that people already knew for a long time, but I couldn't find it written very sharply, let's say. So let me explain it and make sure we know what it is. So as I said, the basic point is that usually when we talk about Lorentzian string theory, we define it in a way by analytic continuation from a theory which has Euclidean target space. So we usually start with a CFT with Euclidean target, and then do some computation and continue the vertex operators at the end to the Lorentzian section. So that's the conventional procedure. And it works slightly differently in spacetimes that are asymptotically ADS than in the usual flat space scattering problem. And the other example I'm going to talk about today, this asymptotically linear dilaton background, is a little bit in between the flat space case and the ADS case, but for some of these purposes, more similar to the asymptotically ADS problem. So let's start with that in mind. That will make the issues clearer. I would say the reason why is because in flat space, the only thing we can compute is the S matrix. We don't really have a discussion of the choice of state, of background state. But if we talk about ADS, the thing we usually compute are some correlators of asymptotic, that is, local operators on the boundary, like insertions at the boundary of ADS. And then in Lorentz signature, we do the computation starting in some state. So we have to specify this data. How is it done on the world sheet? That's the first thing I want to explain. So in spacetime, you know, if we were just doing QFT in ADS or perturbative quantum gravity in ADS, we would specify the state by performing Euclidean path integral. That's a very typical way to specify the state in ADS. So we might have some path integral like this. This is some lumpy boundary. This is like the ADS boundary. If this were, you know, a round hemisphere, we would reduce the ADS3 vacuum. But it's some lumpy thing, so it makes some other state. And then how do we do computations? Well, we think of something like a Schwinger-Keldysh contour. You have this picture, this Euclidean picture over here that prepares your state. Then I do some Lorentzian evolution in real time, up, back down again, and then I glue the rest of the state. And then I insert my local operators or my operators along this Lorentzian contour, and that computes the time order correlator in the state. So that's a usual target space picture. Now, from the world sheet point of view, this Schwinger-Keldysh contour, Euclidean cap, the Lorentzian excursion back, and the other state that you use to compute the conventional ADS correlators. From the world sheet point of view, it's a contour in complexified field space because the space-time is the target space of the world sheet. So from the point of view of the world sheet CFT, there's also a very obvious reason why you needed to pick such a contour. It's because if we just started with the Lorentzian CFT, and you can, let's imagine for now, leading order in alpha prime, so we just have some nonlinear sigma model into this target space. The reason from the world sheet point of view that you needed to pick such a contour is because the Lorentzian guy has wrong sign kinetic terms for the time coordinate of the target. And so therefore you needed to pick some contour in complexified field space to make the path integral of the world sheet CFT well-defined. Actually, if you go back to this picture, it's easy to see that the Lorentzian part of the contour is contractible because you go up and you come back. So it doesn't actually change the homology of the integration cycle over complexified field space from the point of view of the world sheet nonlinear sigma model whose target is this Schwinger-Keldysh contour. So that's a fancy way of saying that the Lorentzian excursion doesn't change the definition of the CFT. So the prescription is really do the computation in the Euclidean target theory and then analytically continue the answer. And that's actually what people do in practice. Okay, but that's the reason why it's the right, why that makes sense. Okay, so I just said that. So let me just remind you of a few examples of ADS string theories, and then I'll start to get into the main point of the talk today. So one example that I'll refer to a little later on is the ADS3 string theory. So in the bosonic string, that's just the SL2RWZW model. It has a level K, which is not quantized because this group is a non-compact group. And that looks like ADS3 is supported by H3 flux, the never Schwartz B field strength flux H. So this is what the background looks like geometrically. And you can check that the WZW action takes this form. And if you write out this term, it just looks like the usual sigma model kinetic term on a particular space-time manifold, which is the group manifold of SL2R. The SL2R group elements look like this, where G has determinant 1. And that corresponds to the condition that these, in this parameterization, it looks like this, which is just the hyperbolic cutout that gives you ADS3. So that's the way of saying that SL2R group manifold is ADS3. And then the Wessel-Zermino term is exactly the coupling of the B field. So this is the string background. And the most straightforward thing to compute there are what are called short string amplitudes. They look like, those look like the insertions of local operators on the ADS3 boundary from the point of view of the dual ADS3 CFT2. And those are a certain kind of vertex operators in this world sheet there. And the point of the previous slide is that we should really think of them as defined by analytic continuation from the Euclidean theory, which is an SL2C mod SU2 WZW model. You can understand that in a similar way. You can write down a general SL2C matrix. The quotient by SU2 basically implies that it's, you can gauge fix the quotient by taking the matrix to be Hermitian. And again, it had determinant one, and this is a Hermitian matrix with determinant one, and that gives you Euclidean ADS3 as a manifold. And so you have the same story. And so the vertex operators are, oh my God, how many times I give this talk and I still never fixed this typo. I'm so sorry. So what this should say is this is a vertex operator, which is at a point C on the world sheet, and it has a label X, which is not a field, it's just a label, number, parameterized a point on the ADS3 boundary, Euclidean ADS3 boundary. If we work in Poincaré coordinates, basically it just looks at leading order at large K like a mode function. What should have been written here was the field X, which is a function of Xi, minus little x, the variable with the number, not this expression that makes no sense. Sorry about that. I hope it's clear what I meant to write here. And R is the other world sheet field. So there are dynamical world sheet fields R and X bar, and then the thing, and all three of those are functions of Xi, the world sheet coordinate, and this should have said X, the dummy variable that sits here. So sorry about the time. So this thing has world sheet weight minus J times J minus 1 over K of minus 2. There's this shift in level because I'm talking about the bosonic string. So there's a one loop correction in the bosonic WZW model. And it has dimension 2J with respect to the boundary current algebra. So this looks like an insertion of a local operator in the boundary with dimension 2J. So whether or not you have this as an on-shell vertex operator in your theory depends on whether there are other operators in some internal CFT who can be combined with it so that the total weight is 1-1 operator, so that it will be an on-shell operator. So some discrete spectrum of J's will turn out to be the actual physical operators in a particular ADS3 times some internal manifold compacted against them. But what I'm going to say today really has nothing to do with the internal manifold, so I will mostly suppress that. Okay, now the main point here is just the Lorentzian correlators are given by analytic continuation in this dummy variable X, this variable X, which is not an operator, it's a parameter. And you could also discuss a different theory where I prepared in the past the state not by doing the round Euclidean ADS3, but something with lumpy boundary. That would be like turning on sources in the Euclidean section. And it would also be possible to define such CFTs. They correspond to deformations of this Euclidean CFT by non-normalizable modes. And in general, of course, they won't be exactly solvable the way this model is, so it will be hard to do calculations exactly, but it's perfectly well defined. And then when you continue to Lorentz signature, you will end up studying different states in the same string perturbation theory on different states in the same asymptotically ADS3 geometry. Okay, let me also discuss a couple of other examples, and then I get again to the main point today. Another important example is the BTZ string theory. So how do we do perturbative world sheet, how does string world sheet see the BTZ black hole? Well, you know that the two-sided BTZ black hole is just an orbifold of ADS3. So we can take the ADS3 string theory that I just said and quotient it by spatial translation in Rindler coordinates. That's what gives the BTZ geometry. It acts like this in some, I made some particular choice, but this is an example of such a hyperbolic space-like translation. And so, again, it should be understood by analytic continuation of the Euclidean theory. So you take the Euclidean AES3 and quotient it by your shifts by exactly this direction. And then there it has a Z2 involution, which you use to analytically continue it to Lorentz signature. So that's like you're preparing the thermal field model. And that was discussed a long time ago. Just to point out, of course, in Lorentz signature, there are other kinds of Rittix operators, which are like the normalizable mode operators that don't look like the boundary insertions. But now, once you're in something like BTZ, those aren't related in any simple way by the boundaries that operator correspondence to the other ones. And I won't discuss that kind of Rittix operator today. So I'm going to discuss the kind of computations where you compute time-ordered correlators on the boundary. More convention. Okay, and then the last example, which is maybe the least familiar, although it's simpler than BTZ, is just thermal ADS. So if you like, you could imagine you have ADS3 below the Hawking page transition so that it's not, the thermal ensemble is not dominated by the BTZ black hole, but rather just a thermal gas of gravitons and strings. So how do you describe that? Well, we take exactly the same Euclidean CFT, worldsheet CFT, that was this quotient of Euclidean ADS3 by Z. That looks like a solid torus, topologically. And now we just continue it to Lorentz signature in the other way. So we cut the solid torus like this, and then it produces the thermofield double state, because this connected region, between two Lorentzian ADS3s. So you can kind of see here how you needed the Euclidean theory to define what you meant in Lorentz signature. If I just said to you that I did worldsheet string theory that lived in two disjoint union of ADS3s, you wouldn't know whether I was studying the vacuum or the thermofield double state with what temperature. So you need the Euclidean contour to tell you what's going on. And again, an important point, and this will be important in what I discuss soon, it's crucial that the way the Lorentzian theory is defined is by analytic continuation of the Euclidean vertex operators that are labeled by points on the ADS boundary, and you continue those guys to Lorentz signature. So if we have one of the Euclidean operators labeled by a point on the ADS boundary x and tau, because the Euclidean theory is just an orbifold, it's given by a sum over shifts of tau over the orbifold images in the unorbifolded theory. So that's completely straightforward. And then that guy, I can continue tau to Lorentz signature, and it makes perfect sense. If you don't do it in that way, there's a potential for confusion, because if you just try to write down the Lorentzian operators in frequency basis, you might be confused because it seems that they will not be invariant under the orbifold, which shifts imaginary time by beta. And so then the only Lorentzian frequencies you would think are allowed are imaginary numbers that correspond to the Euclidean Metsubara frequencies. That's clearly incorrect. So that's the kind of trouble one runs into if you don't realize that you need to define the Lorentzian theory by continuation from some Euclidean piece. Okay, so that was a very long-winded thing. Maybe that was all totally obvious. But anyway, some of those ingredients I'll use in the rest of the talk. I just want to make sure that was clear. Okay, so now let's come back to the main topic. The question is, can we find a duality between a string theory in the connected black hole and string theory in an entangled sum of disconnected microstates? Now, let's first ask, what would be the Euclidean continuation of such a duality if we could find one? So the Euclidean, let me just draw 2D pictures because it's easy to draw. So the Euclidean continuation of the connected black hole is just a disk. Boundary of the disk is like the ADS boundary, if you like. The Euclidean continuation of this thing is an annulus. Because it's an annulus, it produces a thermally entangled state automatically. When I cut this Euclidean path integral here, like a horizontal axis, the state on the left is entangled with the one on the right, so it's exactly the thermofield double state of entangled guys. And but I drew this green line, and this green line is representing whatever the microstates are. Okay, so that's the main thing to be understood. And then we can draw these pictures in another way. The disk is the same thing as a cigar, and the annulus is the same thing as a cylinder. Okay, so in string theory, there is an immediate objection to such a duality, because on the left-hand side, well, on both sides of this Euclidean continuation of the duality, we can talk about strings that wind around the Euclidean time direction. And it's clear that in the picture on the left, connected black hole, the winding is not conserved because it can slip off the end. And this place where the Euclidean time circle shrinks away smoothly is the Euclidean avatar of the bifurcate horizon of the Lorentzian geometry. Right. On the other hand, in this side of the duality, this supposed duality, it looks like this circle never shrinks. That's the whole point. It doesn't shrink because the two sides are disconnected in Lorentz signature. So how can there possibly be an equivalence between these two things? Well, there must be something which makes winding around the Euclidean time direction in this disconnected picture not conserved. And so there are various ways that could happen. One possibility is that as you get toward the green region, which replaced the horizon, the string coupling gets very strong, and well, who knows what happens, and maybe the winding strings can break, but we don't have any way to describe it. Another possibility is that there might, this green line might represent some deep rain. Then at one loop, then there are open strings, and so then at one loop, the wound closed strings can break. But because that here it looks like the non-conservationist tree level effect, here it would be a one loop effect, so it still sounds somewhat delicate. There might be examples that could be understood like that, but I won't pursue it today. I'll mention a little bit what might go into that, but that seems a bit harder. And then the easiest case would be if you do it all in the closed string theory and you just have an explicit condensate of winding strings on this side. And that will be the structure of the duality I'll talk about today. So the Euclidean version of this duality is an old story. And so the new ingredient will be to discuss what it means in Lorentz signature. Now, to comment on this open string possibility that I primarily won't discuss, and maybe just to give you another way of thinking about it, when we're talking about AES backgrounds in string theory, they're often given by the near horizon geometry of some objects, right? You know, AES 5 times S5 is the near horizon of these three brains. The example that I'll talk about later today in AES 3 is like the near horizon geometry of the F1 string themselves. And so it's natural, perhaps, to look for some hybrid dual description where, you know, out at the boundary and in most of the spacetime, you use the geometric side of AES CFT description. But then at some point in the interior, before you reach the horizon, you end the space back at an explicit collection of those objects. So a little bit like in Randall-Sundrum geometry. So for instance, we could have, imagine the eternal black hole at AES 5 times S5, and then we try to apply the AES CFT duality only in the region kind of near and interior to the horizon. So we will end the space-time in a place where the S5 shrinks and you have back the stack of explicitly free. But in general, that's difficult to do because you know, if your parameters of J Mills and N and AES 5 times S5 are such that the AES 5 description is good, then the description in which you put back at some point in the interior the explicit stack of ND3 brains will be extremely strongly coupled. So we don't perhaps have a good framework to discuss that. And that's related to the fact that in this story you would have to balance tree level effects with one loop effects, and it's not clear if you could do that in a controlled way. But maybe there are some examples at small or tough coupling that are of this type. But the easiest case is this pure NS AES3 examples, because then it's just a closed string duality. And everything is at string tree level. But there is something about it which sounds challenging. The thing about it which sounds challenging is that you need a condensate of Euclidean time winding operators here. And it is very unclear what is the Lorentzian meaning of Euclidean time winding operators, for the obvious reason that once you go to the Lorentz signature, there's no circle for these guys to wind. And it also sounds very strange to have the spatial direction of the world sheet wrapped in the time direction of the target stars. So what is the Lorentzian meaning of those guys? So that's going to be the main topic of the talk. So we know some dualities like this, these winding condensate dualities. The original and most well-studied one, which will be the main thing I'll talk about, is this 2D duality, that is 2D target space, and of course the 2D CFT, found by Fedeyev, Zamolodchikov and Zamolodchikov. And it's a duality between two different descriptions of the SO2R module and Kohl set. The two different descriptions, one of them is valid in, well, one of them becomes weakly coupled when the level is very large. Then it looks like a weakly curved nonlinear sigma model on this cigar space. And then the other description is something that is called Sine-Liouville theory. And that's the Sine-Liouville slide is this disconnected picture with the condensate. So here there are Lagrangians. The cigar Lagrangian is this nonlinear sigma model on this manifold with a linear dilaton. Once you take this quotient, actually the B field that was in 83 kind of disappears or can be gauged away, if you like. So it has this non-constant dilaton background and this geometry. And then the Sine-Liouville theory is, if not for this last term, the condensate would be extremely simple. It just looks like the Euclidean time circle together with an infinite radial direction and a linear dilaton. So it's like the cylinder just goes all the way to infinity out here, and this green line goes all the way to infinity. And of course, the string coupling grows in that region. Okay, and then the condensate part is this. So this is an operator which carries Euclidean time winding, and it has some profile in the radial direction so that it's a marginal operator. And then it's added here with some coefficient. Incidentally, there's not a family of such CFTs parameterized by the coefficient lambda. And the reason is because by shifting the field rho, one can rescale lambda. And that doesn't do anything here. And all it does is shift the asymptotic value of the dilaton, which is not observable from the point of view of 2D CFT. So the models with different lambda look equivalent as CFTs. So they're really only the model with lambda zero and the model with lambda non-zero. It's not really a small deformation. Okay, but it's a small deformation in the weak coupling limit. So these are the two guys. Now, let me briefly review this Euclidean CFT duality. I studied for a long time. A duality was essentially proven eventually by Teschner, and there are many papers on it from a while ago. Let me just briefly describe how it works. If you just look at these Lagrangians at large R and large rho, they simply match. So the two models look the same in the weakly, you know, in the large radius portion where the coupling becomes very weak. And then the winding potential in the Sine-Liouville theory reflects strings away from the strong coupling region, and that region is just absent in the cigar. So at some qualitative level, they match like that. And then the cigar description, I said, is weakly coupled when K is large, and the Sine-Liouville Lagrangian is weakly coupled when K minus 2 is small. And then at some intermediate values, they'll both be strongly or moderately coupled, if you like. And then the main thing that one computes are scattering amplitudes of these kind of vertex operators, which are labeled here by the quantum numbers under the SL2R. J is the total Casimir, and then the SL2R WZW model has, of course, two SL2R symmetries, a left and a right. And because of the coset for a simple class of operators has the one on the left set equal to the one on the right. And that's why they have the same sort of J3 or L3 quantum number. And this the weight for the things that look like the scattering matrix is that it should be half plus the pure imaginary number. So that gives you states that in Lorentz signature will scatter in and out from this asymptotically linear dilaton black holes. So on the cigar side of the duality, it's completely clear what the Lorentzian continuation is. It's this two-sided linear dilaton black hole. You just flip the sign here. Okay. Well, in this guy, it's totally unclear what the Lorentzian meaning is. Of course, you can flip the sign here. And then because tau was a circle, we would be doing thermal string theory in linear dilaton times time. But it's not clear what happens to this thing in Lorentz signature, because it involves winding around the Euclidean direction. OK, let me skip this. It's not terribly important. So what is the meaning of the Lorentzian time winding? Now, the main point is the following. So let's first consider Euclidean world sheet. And then we have insertions of various vertex operators here that we will eventually continue to the Lorentzian values of their quantum numbers. That would be conventional Lorentzian computation. And we're starting in the theory without this. So the idea today is although this lambda, because there is a condensate, cannot quite be treated as a perturbation, let's just pretend that it can in order to understand the meaning of this operator. So let's talk about the theory where we delete this winding condensate. Then it's a very trivial theory. It's just linear dilaton times the compact boson. We continue that to Lorentz signature. It's just the thermofield bubble theory in linear dilaton times time. And then we want to see what is the meaning of adding this operator. So we start with the Euclidean computation. So we have a bunch of operators that we will continue to Lorentz signature in an ordinary way. And then one of these operators that has winding around the Euclidean time circle. So what do we do here? So the main point is that we can describe the Euclidean time winding operator, let's say, by an asymptotic condition on the world sheet. So for instance, semi-classically, you might say that you can obtain the insertion of this operator in the world sheet's path integral, which is, after all, free theory before we even started it in this example. Simply by saying that there are particular asymptotics of the Wilczek fields, rho and tau, as you approach this operator. In particular, tau has winding one around it. So it's a kind of defect operator in this very simple 2D CFT. And so then, what does it mean in Lorentz signature? Well, instead we should kind of fix the gauge by taking time on the world sheet to look like tau in the target. And so then when you continue to Lorentz signature in the target, we're going to be treating this operator for what we might call angular or Rindler quantization. So I'll describe what I mean by that. But the basic point is that we do this Euclidean computation, and then in order to get a Lorentzian picture, you want to cut the world sheet at a value of constant tau. And so unlike conventional vertex operators, where a circle of constant tau will surround them so that you will discuss the usual radial quantization and you think of the vertex operators producing a state, here the line of constant tau will go directly into the vertex operator. It's an angular quantization. And so it looks like some kind of string which has an infinite asymptotic region of the single world sheet string. So that's what will give us a Lorentzian picture for what this insertion means. And then we can just import the Euclidean duality to Lorentz signature. Okay, so let me try to unpack what I just said in a little more detail. So first of all, if we go back to conventional string theory, we have the usual flat space S matrix or short string boundary insertions in the ADS context. There's an associated I epsilon prescription in string theory that was discussed in a paper in the past 5 years by Whitten. So the I epsilon prescription is that the world sheet becomes Lorentzian very close to the insertion of the vertex operator in the sense of radial quantization. In other words, the radial direction going into the vertex operator becomes Lorentzian in the approach limit. And that sounds completely natural because that's exactly how you think of the vertex operators producing some scattering spin. And that's compatible with the conventional gauge where I will identify the time coordinate of the target with the time coordinate on the world sheet in radial quantization. Now, as I already alluded to in ADS, at least we consider other kinds of other uses of operators. In particular, if you imagine in the ADS problem turning on sources, then those correspond to addition of operators just in the Euclidean section of the target, because you want to prepare a different state. So you don't want to insert your operator in the Lorentzian boundary, you insert it in Euclidean piece that used to prepare the state, and then there's no I epsilon at all. They're just associated to completely Euclidean, just some completely Euclidean feature. If you were to analyze the resulting string theory, say semi-classically, like Alec Gross-Mendez, then you will find a completely Euclidean piece of the world sheet producing that state. So that also makes sense. So we do some Euclidean path integrals to produce that. On the other hand, these other guys, these Euclidean time winding operators, especially in the case where the winding is conserved, are just incompatible with the static gauge. And instead, you need to pick angular gauge, right? That's because the tau direction wraps around the vertex operator, so you cannot set it equal to the radial direction. It's just inconsistent. So that gauge is not allowed. And those operators really associated with a different I epsilon prescription, which is that you're supposed to continue the angular coordinate to be Lorentzian near the insertion of the operator. So it looks like a point in Rindler's space. Okay, so there is a general CFT2 story, which is completely analogous to the usual state operator correspondence, and it just it's associated to a different Lorentzian continuation of the same conformal mapping. Let me just try to describe that. So in the usual state operator correspondence, the idea is that you do radial quantization. And so then local operators are in one-to-one correspondence with states of the CFT on a circle. Okay, instead of thinking about that, we can also, let's say we have an operator in Lorentz signature, you could work in 2D Rindler coordinates and do the conformal mapping that takes the Rindler horizon out to the Poincaré horizon. Or equivalently, we can think about the same 2D conformal mapping of the plane to the Euclidean cylinder, but now we quantize in the angular direction of the cylinder instead of the radial direction. And so this says that there's a one-to-one correspondence between asymptotic conditions in Minkowski space to the CFTs and local operators. And so that is the way that one is supposed to quantize these Euclidean time winding operators in order to continue them to Lorentz signature. They're only compatible with that quantization because otherwise you couldn't fix, I guess for obvious reasons. Okay, so let me sort of describe the picture again. We imagine some correlator which has a bunch of ordinary Lorentzian vertex operators, V1 through Vn, just in this very simple theory of the thermal linear dilaton times time. That's the Lorentzian theory. And then some number of insertions of the Euclidean time winding operators. Because I wanted to add it to the Lagrangian, I'm expanding out the exponential here. So I get terms like this. Of course, I always have to have equal numbers of winding and anti-winding because winding was conserved in the original model. But let's just look at a particular one where I have just one insertion of W plus and one of W minus. So we have a diagram like this, and I might have more of these. Now, we can map this sphere diagram to the cylinder and put W plus on one end and W minus on the other. And we have a bunch of ordinary vertex operators inserted here. And we have two coordinates on the cylinder. I'll call the radial one U and the angular one S. But because these guys have winding of the time direction, you can't fix the gauge by taking this guy equal to the time. That's incompatible with this operator, but you can fix the gauge by taking this guy equal to the time. So that's what we're going to do instead. Now we'll make it easy to continue to Lorentz signature. Let me try to describe this operator now, therefore, as a kind of asymptotic condition. So I think, so I'm just going to describe now a Hilbert space of strings in R1 instead of a circle with a particular asymptotic condition on the two ends. And then this worldsheet diagram has a Lorentzian interpretation as a trace in that Hilbert space together with insertions of these operators. So that's the meaning of inserting this W plus W minus. Now, so the vertex operator in particular in this FCC duality, the W plus looks like e to the I tau times an exponential in the radial coordinate rho. And what is the asymptotic condition it's associated to? Well, first of all, it has winding one for tau. That's, oh, I should have put here tau left minus tau right. Sorry, that's typo. So it's e to the I, the winding part of tau. So therefore, it looks like a defect operator where tau has winding one. And what about the radial guy? Well, the radial guy has a particular asymptotics as C is the worldsheet coordinate. As I go toward the vertex operator insertion at C equals zero, this coordinate rho runs out to infinity at a particular rate. Okay, and that's clear for any exponential vertex operator. You can see it in different ways. It's sort of like asking for the OPE of the worldsheet field rho itself with this exponential operator. This is, of course, not a primary, which is reflected in the fact that you have some logarithmic behavior on the right-hand side. On the other hand, on the cylinder, because you have the background charge, there's linear dilaton, there's an additional shift in the asymptotic by the background charge, Q, which is here 1 over square root of K minus 2. And so the total asymptotic on the cylinder takes this form. So in terms of this U coordinate, when I go out toward U goes to plus and minus infinity and go toward these operator insertions, this operator, the radial coordinate rho runs out to infinity in this way. And so there's a big difference in the physics depending on whether this number is positive or negative, which I'll come back to. So, but now again, the main point is that we analytically continue the target space from to its Schwinger-Keldysh contour because we want to compute some Lorentzian correlators. And then the asymptotic conditions in worldsheet fields at the place where we inserted these time-winding operators just tell you that there is a background string. There's some string already sitting there because you added it to the action, which comes in and out from infinity. So it's some kind of folded string in this 2D target whose endpoints come from infinity at some particular rate. And that's true also in the Lorentzian section. Now, the fact that you have winding one in this picture tells you the state on a pair of such folded strings. So the reason we get a pair again is the following. We're describing this picture. Here is our W plus and W minus insertion. Here is, this is a worldsheet picture. Here is the infinite folded string whose asymptotes hit this, come out from this vertex operator and that one. That brings them to out from rho goes to infinity. But the whole worldsheet computation is done on the full sphere, which we cut in half here. So we can think of it in Lorentz signature as a pair of such strings in the state produced by this Euclidean part of the amplitude, exactly the thermophile double state of these two folded strings. So the a single insertion of W plus W minus tells you that you're computing a scattering amplitude in the thermofield linear dilaton times time theory off of a folded string, a pair of folded strings, one in each piece of this target space, which is disconnected, that lives in the thermofield double state on its worldsheet. So that's the final result of this story. Okay, so that's in some ways the main point, but I'll try to further illustrate in different ways. First of all, another question that we asked is, instead of talking about this operator, this winding condensate operator from the starting point of the unperturbed theory, which is just linear dilaton times time, you could ask about what is the Lorentzian meaning of this operator in the cigar, that is, after you added the condensate. Of course, in the cigar theory, or after I add the condensate in the Sine-Liouville language, winding isn't conserved. So I can't really label things by a conserved quantum number of winding, but there is an analogous parameter of spectral flow. So it's still a good quantum number, although it's not conserved. In fact, there's some selection rule where this winding, even in the case where it's not conserved, only changes by plus or minus one. But anyway, you can ask, what is the Lorentzian meaning of this kind of operator there? And I don't have a complete answer for, but there are two ways one can study it. One can study it in the same kind of angular quantization. And then the main non-trivial part still has, therefore, winding one around the Euclidean time direction, which will make it get continued Lorentz signature to some asymptotic, some string with two infinite ends in a particular thermally entangled state. But it's more complicated to understand what's the asymptotics of the radial field, because the cigar is not a free theory. So we try to do that in some indirect way, starting with operators where the string goes out to the weak coupling infinity, and then there are analytically continue them in some way in order to find the interesting ones that are associated with the Sine-Liouville operator as poles in some amplitudes with those guys. But that story is kind of involved, and I don't really have time to discuss it. We still didn't have a complete picture yet. Now, something to just point out, of course, is that what's the answer? So the answer is that you get a condensate of some folded entangled strings. And where do the ends of these strings come from? Which way do they fold? Well, it depends on the sign of this. So at large K, when the black hole description is good, this is positive. And then the string endpoints come from the strong coupling region. So it looks like you have some entangled strings that are extending out at you from the strongly coupled region that replaced the horizon. And then when you add the condensate of those guys, you get a world shape theory, which is exactly equivalent. It's dual by the CFT2 duality to the connected black hole CFT. So that's the main punchline. However, the way I described this operator was as a perturbation. And of course, as I said, it's a condensate, right? You exponentiated it. So there's another story when the level is smaller than 3, then this is a negative number. Then these folded strings come from the weakly coupled region. In that case, I can consider hybrid theory where I add Liouville and Sine-Liouville. That is not possible when k is bigger than 3. In that case, especially for the special value of k equal to 9/4, where it's related to this equals 1 string, was studied by Maldacena in around 2005. And then there is an analogous story. However, it's not really clear whether the dual description is in the black hole regime, because you have these extended folded strings that come all the way out from the weak coupling region. So the main idea here is that even in the black hole regime at large K, one can still use this Sine-Liouville description, even in Lorentz signature. It looks very strongly coupled in the sense that the condensate is large. However, it's a condensate of strings that are coming out of the strongly coupled region. So that's sort of the picture. So another way of saying it is, like, in this case, there is a stringy description of the microstates that look like particular states of these folded strings that are coming out of the strongly coupled region. But I think to give a precise description of any specific microstate would be very difficult and involve strong coupling. But somehow the thermofield double entangled state of those microstates is much easier to describe through this trick of the Euclidean time winding operator. So So that's the basic lesson. So that's kind of the story for the Lorentzian version of FCZ. Let me briefly tell you about a related conjecture, a sort of another example of a similar description in which ER equals ZPR can look like a string duality. This is not from a known CFT duality, so it's therefore more of a conjecture. We can just look at, even the simplest example is to just look at, let's go back to the BTZ black hole. So what will be the analog of the FCZ duality for the BTZ black hole? Well, we need to have something that looks like the disconnected side of the duality where the Euclidean time circle does not shrink in the interior, if we want to start with the Euclidean version of the duality. And then we'll add a time-winding condensate. So one way to achieve that is to start with the Poincaré patch orbital. So I start with the Poincaré patch of ADS3, and then I quotient by a lattice. So the boundary looks like a T2, the same as the boundary of the Euclidean black hole. But now neither circle shrinks in the interior. In fact, there's a kind of like exponential cusp as you go in, because the size of these two circles goes down exponentially, as you can see in this metric. So R goes to infinity is the ADS boundary, R goes to minus infinity is this interior. So, and in fact, we don't even need to consider the spatial orbifold. And then we won't be talking about BTZ, but just ADS Rindler. So we can just consider, we can take X to not be compact. And then this geometry has an easy Lorentzian interpretation for continued signature. It's simply the thermal state in the Poincaré patch. But the thermal state in the Poincaré patch is a rather funny thing, because the Poincaré patch we usually study at zero temperature, right? So usually if we're in Poincaré ADS and we turn on a temperature, we will switch to the black hole, the planar black hole, i.e. ADS Rindler. Here we're talking about the Euclidean way of preparing the state that looks like the thermofield double state in the Poincaré patch. So in particular, that means something from the point of view of string theory, because this cycle gets very small, so winding strings become very light as you go all the way in. So there's some papers of Silverstein and Horowitz where they studied tachyon condensation of those winding strings. And what I'm going to try to describe is the endpoint of that tachyon condensation, if you like, in the original variables. So I'm not going to switch to the ADS Rindler metric. That is the correct answer, but I want to give a dual description of string theory at ADS Rindler, where it looks like a condensate in this kind of geometry where the Euclidean time circle didn't shrink, so that the target space will be disconnected if we continue to Lorentz signature. And so I don't really have time to describe this whole duality, but the world sheet Lagrangian, including the B field, can be written in Poincaré patch in some particularly simple way. This is this exponential feature of the metric. And there is some way of rewriting it, which can be rather convenient by integrating in some one form. You kind of recognize that you have del of this combination and del bar of its conjugate only. So it's natural to introduce sort of a chiral and anti-chiral holomorphic field. And this is sometimes called the Wakimoto parameterization of this WZW model. And so this theory where we did this Z quotient, I'm calling the cusp theory. But again, its Lorentzian meaning is just the thermal state, thermofield double state of the Poincaré patch. So it's like if I don't switch to the black hole ensemble, which in this case would just be ADS Rindler and bring us back to global ADS, but I don't do that. I have this theory which in the Euclidean geometry has a cusp in the interior. And then I deform it by a winding operator around the Euclidean time direction together with whatever radial a wave function I need to make it a primary with weight 1-1. So actually, you can compute the contribution to the weight from the winding guy, and it turns out to be 0. So this guy is just some weight one. You need this guy constructed out of the radial field to be a weight 1-1 operator. And there's a good candidate, which is exactly the interaction that appeared here in this Wakimoto parameterization, so sometimes called the Wakimoto interaction. It looks sort of like a action of, it's a descendant of one of the simple operators. So we take one of the simple exponential operators, e to the minus 2 alpha r, and take a descendant of it from the point of view of the current algebra. That guy has weight 1-1, and then we can multiply it by this piece from the Euclidean time direction and produce an overall marginal operator. Okay, so the conjecture is that if you take this funny theory with the cusp and you deform it by a condensate, you deform it by this winding operator, then you end up with a guy which is equivalent to the original, well, equivalent again to just Euclidean ADS, if we phrase it as Euclidean duality. So all the symmetries match, the non-conservation of the winding matches because we added a winding condensate. The deformation is small in the asymptotic region, so they match there trivially. And this deforming operator puts a potential that can reflect strings away from the infinite cusp region. And so we might be tempted, therefore, to think that we have to get the conventional ADS3 string theory because asymptotically it looks the same and there's no longer any infinite region in the interior where something can escape them. So it would seem slightly funny if there was another different theory which could look have the same asymptotics but be different in the interior. That can happen, of course, but that seems somewhat unlikely. So it seems like a reasonable thing to conjecture that you have such a Euclidean duality. And we haven't done many explicit checks of this duality. So as I said, it would be like the endpoint of this of winding tachyon condensation as discussed in Will's paper. And so again, the Lorentzian story will be the same as in the FZZ case. Again, as you approach the winding operator, the radial coordinate on the world sheet goes out to this cusp region. So you'll have a condensate of entangled strings. The target space looks like two copies of the Poincaré patch, two disconnected Poincaré patches. There are strings in each Poincaré patch that come out of the infinite cusp region and then fall back. And there is some condensate, and they live in an entangled state. So that's what's produced by this winding vertex operator. And then because we added it to the action, we get a condensate of these strings. And so again, the picture would be that the condensate of these folded strings that come out of the infinite cusp region rebuilds the horizon and the black hole interior. So it's a kind of like a realization of the Susskind-Uglum picture, where you know, if we looked at strings that cross the horizon, maybe somehow it could count the entropy of black holes. It's a bit vague. It's also related to some work of Horowitz and Polchinski. But the idea here is to really try to write down some exact world sheet duality of this type. So if the Euclidean duality is correct, which could be proven or not, because it's an explicit world sheet CFT, explicit CFT, so that's a completely sharp question. And then we continue to Lorentz signature. I kind of gave you the interpretation of what it means in Lorentz signature, but the calculations, as usual, of Lorentzian string theory are always done in the Euclidean guy anyway and then continued. So it's at that level of tautology that the Lorentzian duality works. The main point was just to give a semi-classical Lorentzian description of what adding these operators meant in the Lorentzian theory. So they are describing these strings that come out from the Poincaré horizon, in this case. Whether or not you could use such a picture to count the entropy in detail, I don't know. Again, somehow one is in an interesting situation here where it's much easier to give a world sheet description of some special state, namely this thermofield double state, than of other microstates. So if you want, again, a specific microstate here, it would look like a specific very large number of full of strings that are coming out from the Poincaré horizon. And so the duality here again is just ordinary ADS3 Rindler, right? So we have global ADS3, then we try to describe it in the Rindler patch. And the claim is that the Rindler patch observer has an alternate dual description where it looks like the Poincaré patch instead of the Rindler patch. And there are, so what do the ADS3 Rindler microstates look like, right? So the conjecture is the ADS3 Rindler microstates look like some particular pattern of strings that come out of the Poincaré horizon in the Poincaré patch area. And then if I put them together in the thermofield double state, they exactly reproduce the usual global ADS. Reproduce in the sense that they look the same to probe string. That's what it means to have world sheet duality with this condensate on one side and with the other guy, the connective ADS Rindler on the other side. So let me just summarize. First of all, I propose some new CFT duality that's similar to the FCZ duality between the Euclidean BTZ orbifold theory and some singular orbifold deformed by a winding operator, singular in this cusp sense, the thing I just described. So that's, if true, some new just Euclidean duality. And then its Lorentzian interpretation and the Lorentzian continuation of the original FCZ duality is something where I have an eternal black hole and a pair of disconnected spacetimes with infinite regions in the interior in the thermally entangled state and a condensate of entangled strings that stretch out from the infinite throw. And in general, the main ingredient in this Lorentzian picture was to give a Lorentzian description of these Euclidean time winding vertex operators through what we should call angular or Rindler quantization of the world shape. And so, well, there are lots of things I still want to do here. I want to make some checks of this ADS3 version of this duality. And it's probably straightforward to extend these examples to the superstring and some NSNS backgrounds. It would be interesting if this could tell us something about counting of microstates. But again, that's not automatic, even though we did give a world sheet description of a very particular state of the microstates in a language where it looks like an entangled sum of disconnected microstates. But I don't know how to describe generic microstates. That's probably too hard, but maybe. Maybe we could still learn something. And I don't know, it might also be interesting to look at some of these phenomena like the traversable wormholes that I and others have studied and see whether it could be described explicitly. How does that work in the disconnected description where it looks like there is no interior of the black hole, instead there's just this condensate of some entangled string stretching out from what replaced the black hole. So that's where we might go with this in the future. But anyway, I think it's interesting that at least in some of these examples, we can really see the duality between the connected black hole and this entangled superposition of disconnected microstates as a world sheet duality. So that was all I wanted to say. So thanks for listening. Well, I guess it was either totally clear or totally unclear.
So is there any quantity that you can compute to test some the shift dualities, like if you have some supersymmetry or superstring case?
Let's see. So, I mean, you know, these CFTs are fairly simple because they're being built by deformations of coset models. So the coset models are exactly solvable. And so if we have a duality that relates some deformation of a coset model to another coset model. We might hope to do perturbative calculations on both sides and see if you could see them interpolate. There might be various things that one could do like that. So it's also possible that one could exactly prove such a duality, because again, many of the 2D CFTs involved are integrable. There's some cosets. There should also be a supersymmetric version. So basically, everywhere, well, there's of course a supersymmetric FCC duality, which is duality between the n equals two version of the Segar theory and the n equals two Liouville, which is the n equals two sine Liouville. And similarly, there should be an n equals two version of this 3D duality. So yeah, there are probably some things that could be checked there, but I haven't done that.
Is there any further question to Daniel? So if not, let's Daniel again.